We're doing the Maharal Be'er HaGolah, and the Maharal had said that the essence of wisdom is to understand things correctly, and first and foremost, the person has to understand himself. And one of the great challenges we have when we approach the words of our sages is that we view them as our equals. We don't know how to evaluate ourselves correctly, nor how to evaluate them correctly. And he said the sages were not that way. He quoted the Talmud in Erevin that Rabbi Yochanan said, the early generations had a heart that was as wide open as the ulam. The ulam was the broader room that you would enter after, when you enter the temple, you have the azara, you have the courtyard, you have the area where you have the outer altar, the outer mizbeach. Then you enter the ulam, which was a very wide room. And then from there you enter the heichal, which is a narrower room, a narrower entrance, 10 amos, which is the maximum size a normal entrance could be, is 10 amos. So Rabbi Yochanan said, the hearts of the earlier generations were as wide as the entrance to the ulam, 20 amos wide, that's like 40 feet wide. And the later generations were like the entrance to the heichal, which is 20 feet wide. That's the maximum size of a normal entrance, 10 amos wide. And we were like the eye of a needle, and we went on in that Gemara. And he explained that the earlier generations, their capacity to understand the Torah was so wide, their mind overcame their body. It was like entering an entrance that's extraordinarily big. You don't need 20 amos, you don't need 40 feet for any entrance. The maximum size of a normal entrance is 20 feet. You don't need 40 feet. So when he said their hearts was like the hearts that were like entrances that were 40 feet wide, he meant that they easily connected to the Talmud because their mind overcame their body in a superb fashion to the point where the body didn't get in the way of any understanding. They were just tremendous geniuses. The later generations, so they were much bigger than us, Rabbi Yochanan says, but they were like a regular entrance, meaning they reached balance. When we say their hearts were like the entrance to the Heichal, 10 amos wide, that's the maximum size for a normal doorway, 20 feet wide, well, what that means is that they were in perfect equilibrium, within the realm of equilibrium. The top end of the realm, but they were within equilibrium. The mind and the body worked in sync. Umashim Dameh, we're up to 13 lines from the bottom, the second word on the line. Umashim Dameh Lev Rishonim Lepitcho Shel Ulam Vachonim Lepitcho Shel Heichal. How come he compares the earlier generations to the entrance to the Ulam, which is less holy, and the latter generations he compares to the Heichal, which is more holy? He's coming to say the earlier generations were greater, they had a wider heart. But he's also comparing it to a room that is less holy. That's the ulam. It should be the other way around, because the heichal is holier than the ulam. So why is it that when you enter the temple, you enter a less holy room with a wider entrance, and then you enter the holier room with a smaller entrance, and he's comparing... He's saying the greater generation was like the entrance to the less holy room. It was 40 feet wide. En zakashia, he says that's not difficult. Ki gam beichal b'ulam ukach. Shekmo shamanu etzel adam kasher hu kulo sechel yomar sichlo rachav arbe. Because that's really the relationship between those two rooms. We said that when a person is all brain, when a person is this genius where the brain outdoes the body in an extreme way, so then we say, Kachayaho ulam, that's the role that room, the ulam, played. Kikdushat ulam inab ma'ale elyona kmo kdushat ha'echal shu yoter b'ma'ala. Because the ulam was not on the highest level like the heichal. The heichal was the smaller room, it was holier. Ulficha chaya petach ha'ulam yoter ma'asara. Kikdusha zo nimtzet legamre ba'olam baruch havaze. Ulficha chaya petach ha'ulam esrim ama. That level of holiness was a level that could completely exist in this world. So it has a very wide entrance because it's something that has a great breadth of existence. It's not hindered by the world. But when you enter the holier room, the heichal, in the temple, you're getting closer to the Holy of Holies. So there we say it was 10 amos, the maximum size of a normal entrance.
He
Because that's an indication that on the one hand it's holier, but on the other hand it's constricted. Meaning there's a limit to what we can attain down here below. So you're right, the inner room was holier, but that higher level of holiness is also a limiting factor. There's a point where you can't go beyond that, and that's why it had to have a limited entranceway. So then, although it was an expression of a higher level of holiness, it was a higher level of holiness that could not have full expression in this world, because it's beyond this world. That inner room on its higher level of holiness represents a certain balance. This is the maximum the world can handle. If you think about it, he's trying to explain one point, but in passing he's explaining a different point as well. The temple worked, the way it worked was the following. You had the temple mount, you had the mountain. And as you approached up the mountain, it kept getting, you entered holier and holier stages. Meaning there was a point where you could enter even if you were defiled. And then there was a point where you couldn't enter if you were tummy mace, if you were a certain tumma, but you could enter if you had a different tumma. There was a point where non-Jews could enter up to a certain point. There was a point where Israelites could enter up to a certain point. And then Levites, and then Kohanim, and then the Kohen Gadol. And you work your way up as you ascend the temple, and as you ascend to the temple. And then inside the temple, you go from room to room till you reach the Holy of Holies, where the Kohen Gadol would only enter once a year. Now, this whole concept of having a meeting ground between heaven and earth is something that seems supernatural. God is in the heavens, we're on earth. Why is there a place where we meet? Why is it that God gives us a temple where he says, here you could talk to me and through here I will give blessing to the world? The whole idea seems beyond our world. That God should come down here, well, you had that at Sinai and that was unnatural, that was miraculous. Here we're told, build me a home, and you'll see an expression of my presence there. The Talmud tells us that in the first temple, they had trees made of gold that would produce gold fruits, and the leaves would rustle in the wind, and then they would fall down, and then they'd use them for the poor. A gold tree that produces, you know, money growing on trees, literally gold growing on trees. And the Talmud enumerates many miracles that were par and parcel with the first temple. Representation that God was present there. There was a heavenly fire that came down and never stopped. The winds wouldn't move the pillar of smoke that came up from the altar. You have many miracles there, things that were, there was no natural explanation for them. So, the world is not meant to function in this miraculous state. Here, God's giving us a home which he says is his home. There's a reason why outside the temple you don't see money growing on trees. You don't see golden trees producing golden leaves. You don't see things that Chazal say happened on a daily basis in the temple. But the maximum amount of revelation that the world could handle was what was going on inside the temple. So the holier you get, the closer you get to the Holy of Holies, the more limited the expression of holiness can be. Because you're entering a realm where you're almost entering the realm where you say, okay, that belongs in heaven, that doesn't belong down below. So the Maharal, he's trying to explain the metaphor. But in explaining the metaphor, he's also explaining to us a concept in the temple. That the reason that the entrance rooms got thinner and thinner, smaller and smaller as you approach the Holy of Holies, was because you were getting a greater expression of holiness. So yes, the Heichal was a holier room, but that's exactly why the Heichal needed a more limiting entranceway. And that's the idea that the later generations, although they were less, and in that the metaphor isn't exact, because we're saying that the Heichal was holier than the Ulam, but the idea he's trying to express is that because it was holier, it needed a very exact entranceway, so to speak, a very limiting entranceway, the maximum size, but not beyond that maximum size. Because there had to be a certain balance, a certain point beyond which the holiness could not have representation in the world. God doesn't want a world where you look around and you see miracles. There's one place in the Beis HaMikdash where God made an exception. So you have a limiting factor, but a limiting factor that represents the balance, the equilibrium, the maximum within the balance that can be attained. That's what the metaphor is saying about the latter generations. They were giants, they were great. They hit the maximum level you could attain, while remaining balanced. The earlier generations, they were like the ulam. There you had a lower level of holiness, and in that the metaphor is not really exact, because the earlier generations were greater than the latter generations. But what the metaphor is coming to stress is that there was limitless potential there. The mind was so great that the body didn't even get in its way. It wasn't the balance of the latter generations. It was people who were all mind. People who were such giants that the body never got in the way of their greatness. To us, these are foreign concepts. We discuss it. But when we read about even later generations, when we read about people in the Talmud who are focused for a week straight, we don't understand it. When we learn about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, he lived 20 years ago. He was once taking the buckle for his seat, and the guy outside the door closed the door on his hand. And he didn't say a word. And the driver drove off. And after the driver drove off, and he rounded the corner, he asked him to stop, opened the door, and brought his hand in. So the driver looked at him and said, "Why didn't you say anything earlier?" And he said, "If I would have said something, what would the other guy have felt like?" So we hear that story, and you listen to it, and you say, how could someone do that? It's beyond us. But that was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, a rabbi who lived 20 years ago. And you know what? He didn't come close to the rabbis who lived 200 years ago, 300 years ago. They were maybe 10 times as great as he was. And if you go back 600 years, 700 years, to the generation of Rav Yosef Karo, you have to multiply that exponentially. And Rav Yosef Karo, well, he didn't come close to the giants of the Gaonic period. You have to multiply that by about 100 times. Rav Yosef Karo himself, you see how he talks about the Gaonim. Now you multiply that by about another 50 to 100 times, and you get a rabbi in the days of the Talmud. And we weren't talking about the rabbis of the Talmud. We were talking about the giants that they didn't dare argue with. The rabbis of the Mishnah. So now we have to get a picture of who we're talking about. I don't know. I don't have a picture. You know, you talk to me about angels, maybe I'll think I understand better. You talk to me about people who were able to be on such a level, I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to be Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he lived 20 years ago. So now I'm supposed to figure out what it means, a rabbi who's maybe 10,000 times that size? I don't know. But he says that that's the idea, that generation were so great that their bodies didn't get in their way. The body was something that was really, if you think about Rabbi Akiva, they're skinning him alive. And he's saying Shema Yisrael. And his students ask him, what do you mean you're saying Shema Yisrael now? And he says, my whole life I've waited for this. What do you mean? His whole life he's waited for this. Some people say they're waiting for, an ice cream sundae. There are all kinds of things you could wait for. About a half a year ago, I visited, I have relatives in the U.S., so there was a distant relative who was visiting the grandparents too, and he showed up with this race car with an open roof. So he offered us to take us for a spin around the block. So I said, no, thank you. So he looked at me like I fell off the roof. Don't you want to sit in this race car with an open roof around the block? So he said, no. So at least let your kids take a spin around the block. No, I don't trust how fast they'll go and who knows what with kids in the car. But, okay, that's the extent of what I understand. But to be Rabbi Akiva, where it doesn't interest him, his whole mind, his whole life, he says, I was waiting to have this opportunity to do a Kiddush Hashem. This is the height of his life. Rabbi Akiva cherishes the moment, so to speak. I don't know what that means. I don't know. The Talmud says it. That's what the Maharal is saying. Those were generations where the body didn't get in the way of the mind at all. The Talmud says that at one point the Roman Empire wanted to bring Rabbi Akiva down. So he had come to meet with them, and they set him up in an inn. And then they hired two prostitutes, and they sent them into the room to seduce him all night. So these two women are climbing all over him all night, and he spits to his right and spits to his left, and spits to his right and spits to his left. And he's spending the night spitting. And the next morning, the Roman emperor calls him in and says, what's wrong with you? Aren't you a human being? Are you different than us?
So Rabbi Akiva says, what can I say? I'm sorry. They smelled like rotten meat to me. I was just disgusted with the smell. What did Rabbi Akiva mean? He meant that you see the external physical body. I see rotten meat. A human being is supposed to be something bigger than that. And when Rabbi Akiva sees two women who are trying to cause him to sin, to him that's not attractive. To him he spits. That's rotten meat to him. Okay, so I can say the words. I don't know what that means. So the Maharal says, we're talking about people whose bodies did not get in the way of their minds. So that's an entranceway. It's a 40-foot entranceway. Go, you're yanking a stubborn or walking into that, and that's why they're compared to the entrance to the Ulam. ואם כן, קדושת העולם שהיא קדושה למטה היה נמצא ברוחב יותר והיה הפתח 20 אמה, כי לעולם הקדושה העליונה שאין שייך לגופים התחתונה אינו גובר. וכאשר תעמיק בזה תמצא כי לב בני אדם שהוא מקבל השכל הנבדל וקבלת הקדושה האלוקית הוא דבר אחד בתכלית עד שאין הפרש כלל ביניהם. And he says, if you think about it deeply, you'll realize that the comparison is not even a metaphor. It's a real comparison. That there is really no difference between the Holy of Holies in the temple and the human mind. The human mind is supposed to be like the Holy of Holies and there's really no difference between them. We're talking about all of this as though it's metaphorical. The Maharal says if you look deeply into it, you'll come to a realization that it's not even a metaphor. They're really describing, because as we discussed earlier, the temple and the Holy of Holies was a representation of godliness in the world. It was a venue of connection between humanity and God. And so the Maharal says it's not really a comparison, it's really the same thing. It's one and the same. The mind is the equivalent. It's part and parcel with the Holy of Holies as a place for connection with the one above. We'll pick up here, Bezachem, next time.